Welcome into 11 Personnel. I'm Nick Roush with Adam Luckett, and it feels like I've been baptized, Luckett, and I'm coming out of the new waters, the boiling hot springs, into some fiery hot takes before Kentucky takes on Tennessee. Feels good to be back. Been taking some time off, hanging out with our second child. And so the 11 Personnel is going to be my reintroduction back into the take game. Like, and I'm excited to be here today.
Well, we're glad to have you back. It was a little weird last week. I think I've missed an episode before, but I don't think you have. So I think that was a first.
Yeah. So we've each gotten – we've one off, okay? Yeah. Gosh, you know, twist our arms. But so I might be a little rough around the edges, like forgetting some things, a little slow. I've been just talking baby and like up at weird hours. So I might be a little off my game. Forgive me. What's going to help me get back on my game is some of this here. Oh, no, where'd I put it? Ah, Port Royal Plants. They're proud sponsors of 11 Personnel. I did the thing like it the other day where I went to the zoo and had the baby strapped to me the whole time. And I'm like, oh, this is no problem walking the zoo, you know, just a couple miles with a little, oh no. Afterwards, we're getting some Port Royal Plants bomb all over the back.
Got to stretch, man.
And even the stretching, like I'm just out of it. So it was a wake up call for me. Port Royal Plants, they'll wake you up. Bluegrass base right there in Henry County, organic Kentucky proud products. Check out their CBD products today, whether it's the balm that I'm a big fan of. They've also got, I need to try the Epsom salt bath, like it. I haven't done that yet. That might be a treat yourself kind of night at the Roush house.
Taylor's done that with some Port Royal products.
Yeah.
At our house. So, she's a big fan. Support Royal. Awesome. You do something right.
Visit portroyalplants.com and try it out for yourself today. Like it. I was having this conversation with our producer, Steven, beforehand. And I actually think that as they say, the bye week came at the right time. Baby really came at the right time because not only was there bye week, but Tennessee is they do something to me, Luckett. And like there's something about the volunteer fans just because they are collectively the dumbest humans to walk planet Earth. There's no doubt in my mind that is a truth. And it's something about them. I never met my grandfather. But we share this feeling. He wouldn't allow you to wear orange in his house. He'd say, get that orange Tennessee bull out of here. You know, like it was very much a hated. Like some people are like that with Louisville, but we're in Louisville. We're amongst them, you know? So like we know plenty of Louisville fans. And for the most part, you know, they'll go back and forth with you, but they'll eventually come back down to earth. Tennessee fans as a whole are so delusional. And the fact that they can only be nothing but jerks at all times. I just have no problem putting them into a big pot and generalizing them as the worst humans ever. And frankly, it's been healthy for me to not be diving so much into this Tennessee this week because just watching them in that LSU game, I was fuming because they had no business doing what they were doing. It was all self-inflicted mistakes. And Luckett, I hate how much I've watched this team this year. It might be like a problem I have or like a self-loathing thing where I'm like the dude on the Da Vinci Code who keeps whipping himself, right? Like that's me getting mad watching teams mess up against Tennessee this year because it's happened a ton where teams are just making stupid mistakes and inopportune moments and Tennessee is taken advantage of every single time.
Yeah, it's created this interesting dynamic here. I think just the opportunity here, I think, is very unique for Kentucky. She came into the year, these teams were kind of, you know, right there. Like, you go back to media days, they were, who's number two? Is it Kentucky? Is it Tennessee?
It was just separated by a few votes, too. I think Kentucky was like a dozen more votes for and second place.
They've got both had transfer quarterbacks year two in the system. Tennessee's kind of taken off like a rocket here with mainly their offense, Hendon Hooker. They've won some close games. I talk about one possession wins all the time. They've got three of them. They're 3-0 in one possession games. It's kind of allowed them to get to where they are. And now many in their fan base, and rightfully, you know, that you beat Alabama, you're feeling pretty good about yourselves. They all think that it's like 52 to 20, 48 to 17.
Yeah.
A lot of people think this is going to be, you know, they think it's Tennessee's wearing their black jerseys, black helmets for the first time. This is going to be kind of a statement game for the Vols as they go and play Georgia in the biggest game they've had in a long, long time in November. And here comes little old Kentucky with their NFL quarterback, all SEC running back, and a top 10 defense in 2 weeks to prepare. And that defense had a sour taste in their mouth at how last year, that game last year went. And it's a game Kentucky thought they should have won. You can go back. There was about 5 to 6 key plays in that game that all kind of went Tennessee's way. But that's how football is sometimes. You know, you got to give them credit for that. So there's all that there, and it just – it has a chance for Kentucky. Like, this is just a great, great, great opportunity, and it's what makes this sport so awesome. Now we'll see if Kentucky can go and finish the deal, but Tennessee's up there on the throne eating grapes, right?
They got the pythons on them, you know.
They've got a battle. They're getting rested up for this battle next week. And Kentucky's just got a chance to come in here and really – stick it to them, and so we'll see if they can do it.
And it, we can kind of go through, you mentioned, you know, the ball bounced Tennessee's way in that shootout last year. That's kind of been the case, as I alluded to earlier. The Pitt game, Keaton Slovis goes out first half, so they're playing a backup quarterback, have some late breaks in that overtime win.
LSU can't catch a kickoff to start the game.
The LSU one, or no, the go Florida for one.
Four downs, yeah.
4-1, it was what? They went 90 yards in the last minute because they couldn't tackle the dude in the backfield. Like, they had, like, two guys, Miss Hendon Hooker, in the backfield. And, you know, 90-yard drive to go put up some more points before half. That was a close game. LSU, bunch of self-inflicted mistakes. And then back to that Alabama game, like, Jahmyr Gibbs, just give him the ball, chew up Tennessee's timeouts. They don't run the ball at all. Tennessee has enough time to go kick a game-winning field goal in a tie game. So, a lot of things have gone their way. And to put the shoe on the other foot, it's been kind of the opposite so far this year for Kentucky. Kentucky has been that team that has made the dumb mistakes. They've been the team that didn't have their starting quarterback for a game, right? So, football gods, karma, whatever you want to call it, I would like to think that some of this is in Kentucky's favor and not just the matchup aspect of it, which we'll get to. So, karma. If anybody has earned it, it's Kentucky against Tennessee. This rivalry has been such a kick in the groin so many times, even more so than that damn Florida series. And this one's always felt a lot more personal, too.
Yeah, just geography's big here, right? I think you mentioned it. Like, to me, the older I get, the more I kind of feel and understand this rivalry. Just because how the fan bases are the same, but they're not. Like, there's a lot of similarities, but there's also some differences. And I think both of those kind of drive both sides crazy. Like, their new thing is, like, the coal mine joke. I mean, like, aren't there coal mines in Tennessee? Like, am I missing something here? Like, don't they have mountaintop removal in Tennessee? Like, what am I missing here? It's just, again, like, Tennessee, they love to shove it in Kentucky's face, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They loved to even when they were down, that was the one thing they always had and they always went to. Kentucky's got a chance here to really shove a big one in their face. If you win this game, I know like the season had all these crazy expectations. Yeah. No matter what, win or lose, you probably – odds are you're not hosting Georgia for the SEC East. But you win here, season's a success. Can't say that word this week, but it's a roaring success this year. Because then you're playing with, you know, kind of not necessarily house money, but you can get on like kind of cruise control here at the end of the year and you can kind of bask in the glory of this Tennessee win.
which
if
is
you like, can get it.
It's like 2017 when you know, people think of that season so highly because you ended it by beating Lamar Jackson as a 27.5 point underdog, right? What do we know what the number is now? Is it 11 or so?
12.5 at all books as of
really
noon today.
Thought it might go down even more. I thought I was going to steal 13.5 a week ago. But and it also goes back to, like, it. You were talking about time and place. Back in 07, Kentucky had the chance to keep Tennessee out of the SEC championship game, right? Eric Ainge comes to town. You've been battered and beat up after a hot start. That would have been a chance to really – in the season with an exclamation point. Lona Sieber gets his field goal blocked in overtime number two. They end up losing in four OTs. That was the game I learned to hate Tennessee. I was sitting in the end zone close to that stupid band playing that stupid song, and that one cut me real deep. This is your chance to really be the Lucy to their Charlie Brown, right? Like, this is a great opportunity to come get him back. And look at the thing is, as much as people want to talk about Tennessee's offense, I actually really like the way that Kentucky's defense matches up with them. Is it fair to say that Kentucky's defense is the best they've faced this year?
Yeah, I think – well, the way Kentucky plays defense, I think, is more suited to – because they're going to keep everything in front, right?
It's their most difficult matchup-wise.
Yeah, they're going to make – like, Nick, I'll be very surprised if Jalin Hyatt is running free – on a switch release down the seam, you know, like,
yeah.
I don't think that's like, I don't think they're going to get him matched up with, you know, a safety. I mean, not, that'll happen sometimes, but I don't see that happen again and again and again. I think Kentucky, similar to how Florida played them, like, they're going to make Tennessee earn scores. You know, Tennessee, I think Florida gave up a couple bombs in that game, but you look at all of Tennessee's touchdowns, they had to finish in the red zone, and Pittsburgh was kind of the same way. I think that's kind of the path for Kentucky. Do not let Tennessee get some cheap scores, and then offensively, if you can put a couple 10-play drives together, you can shrink the game, make this a 10-possession type game. Then you get talking into, if you get like a turnover, any type of turnover or turnover on downs against Tennessee, then all of a sudden you're in a game where 31, 34 points could win in regulation. And I think that's kind of the recipe for Kentucky. But the big thing is just do not give up the bombs. And we saw that was big last year. They scored on the, you know, you miss a tackle on a little screen.
Mm-hmm.
Score on a 75-yard or 72-yard touchdown because they get matched up. Their slot receiver gets matched up with a linebacker. That cannot happen. And then they score. They busted a 37-yard run, I think. That's three touchdowns over 35 yards. You cannot – you got to make them earn their scores. And they're great in the red zone, yes, but you have to make them earn it. Because if they're having to earn their those scores, then they're having to run more plays, then there's less possessions. And I think if there's less possessions, that's playing into Kentucky's hands.
Yeah, and there was something you mentioned, too, when we were going back about a month ago or so preparing for another big road trip at Ole Miss. The tempo and the looks, like Carrington Valentine last year when he was getting roasted alive. I know Stoops doesn't like, you know, this is a different team, but like they learned a lot in that game last year. And that was the first time they had ever seen and had to face teams truly out on an island when they're split. And when we talk about splits, Tennessee's receivers line up, what, 5 yards from the sideline. They're not close. They try to use space as much as they possibly can. Kentucky got a lot of looks they had never seen before last year. They've upgraded in the secondary. And then this year they faced some of this tempo before, right? And
in
that game was all about weathering that early storm. And the defense did. The defense did what they had to win. It was the offense that didn't come through and had, you know, three scoring opportunities late, and they just didn't get anything out of them. Turnover on downs, turnover, turnover. It feels like this is a pretty similar game, just with a much more efficient, talented quarterback that really can, just be as aggravating and as frustrating as possible. Because not only is he efficient, he's not going to make a ton of mistakes throwing the football. Where he really, really is going to aggravate me is his ability to shake off tacklers, right? Like, he's a big dude, And I don't remember him. Was he that big in the Belk Bowl? I don't remember that. I don't remember that at all. He felt like a skinny, scrawny little guy, and now he's just throwing dudes off and then running 30 yards down the field.
Yeah, I thought Bill Connolly had an interesting stat regarding that. Tennessee ranks, I think, second in the FBS in scramble yards. So that's pass play, breaks down. Quarterback runs around like Nick's talking about there with Hendon Hooker. I'm pulling that number up right here. They average 42.6 run yards on scrambles, which is fifth in the FBS. Florida ranked third, but Anthony Richardson got 4 yards against Kentucky. Kentucky overall allows just 12.7 scramble yards per game. So, like, Kentucky has been very good against quarterbacks that try to get out of pocket and make plays with their legs. They've been a very good tackling team. They've been a very good team defense team, so everybody kind of in their right spot doing their job. So, for me, I think that's like, if he's having to move around and scramble a lot, I think that's probably a good thing, right? If he's scrambling, that means he's not throwing the ball deep to me. And that's the most dangerous thing they do. You kind of want to force them to run the ball, but you need to be able to be efficient in stopping it. And if you can do that, I think you could have a good chance. To me, like, the front is huge in this game. Like, Justin Rogers, Deion Walker, Square, and however Kentucky decides to fit the run, that's huge. Because when they really get you in trouble is when they get that balance and they can get that play action game going. Then maybe catching you, trying to sneak a guy into the box to stop the run and throw it over your head. So that is very important. But overall, I'm just like, how does Brad White match up this year? Like, what are the wrinkles we see from him off the bye week? Do they go maybe to more like, do we see 6-7 DB packages? Like, how does he incorporate? Because you want Walker, Wright, Weaver, Square on the field, right? How do you keep them on the field, but maybe get into more DB packages? All that kind of stuff will be something I'll be paying attention to. And then you mentioned the tempo. Like, Kentucky held up well against Ole Miss's ground game, which I think it's a promising sign going into this game.
Right.
But it's all about the early haymaker.
Yeah.
Josh Heupel's got 15, 18 plays he wants to run early in the game. I think he scored 21 points off those 15 plays last year. You know, Kentucky didn't see the full script until they got into the second quarter, in my opinion, of what he wanted to do. This year, it's all about, we saw them take a punch early against Ole Miss, settle in. That's what they're going to score one of those first two possessions. After that, it's just settling in. And when they do score, make them go down 9-10 play drive, make them earn a touchdown. And then once you do that, you can kind of settle in and just play football from that point, but it's going to be big, like, just not falling in a hole early in this game.
Yeah, or at least one that's not too insurmountable, right? Yeah. Or, you know, it's a beating a dead horse here too, but it's making them score points, making them score field goals, kicking field goals instead of scoring easy touchdowns off explosive plays. This defense has done a good job of bending, not breaking. And as you alluded to before, they've done a good job of tackling well in open space. That was the key to winning against Mississippi State, and that's exactly what Kentucky did, which, yeah, I didn't get the chance to really bask in that victory. That was nice, like it. That was a good, okay, we're bouncing back. We've got our swag back here. I think you'd have to say more so than the offense than anything, right? Because – it's been a while. I still don't really know what to make of this offense. I like that last second half, but they kind of did some of the same old in that first half against Mississippi State, where it was, oh, this is really promising. This looks good. Oh, let's shoot ourselves in the foot. Oh, let's make another big mistake. So we wanted to see that momentum carried over from the Florida game to the next game, running the ball. Didn't happen. You want to see that momentum from the second half of Mississippi State carry over, in spite of the bye week, because Luckett, as desperate as this team needed a bye week, we all know that the game after the bye week it's never really been kind to Mark Stoops' Kentucky football teams.
Yeah, that's true. 5-7 outright, 3-9 against the spread. But there's a big but in here. They've never really had a game like this to look forward to off a bye. You know what I'm saying? Like, the only thing comparable to me would have been 2014 going to Louisville at the end of the year. That's kind of like a big opponent that you're ready to play, a rivalry type game. And they went and played one of their best games of the season that year. And so if it and covered a, as a double-digit dog and had a great chance to win the game in the fourth quarter. So if Kentucky can do that again, I think there's something to believe in. But if you believe in trends and all that, yeah, the trends are not promising. But then at the same time, they play their best games as underdogs.
Yeah.
They've won half of their 14 games. Since October 2019, they've been a dog in 14 games, and they've won 7 of them.
It's pretty good.
Like that's just this is when they're at their this is when they're at their best. So we'll see what they can do. And they've and since 2018 they've won 4 games outright as a dog of a touchdown or more. So it's not like they had it's not like these they're just pulling off upsets. It's 2-3-4 point dogs. There's been some significant spreads, a couple double digit ones in there. Most notably Florida in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So they, which was 13 and a half was that spread. So it's right around what this is. So they've done this before. And so it's, we'll see if they can, do it again. But yeah, to the offense, on your point on that offense, Nick, like again, even against Mississippi State, there's just a lot on Will Levis's plate, right?
Yeah.
They decided, all right, Flax is out of here. We're going to get, like my biggest frustration in that game was like Rich, pass the ball on first down, like, come on, like you're getting way too high. You're getting by, you know, you're getting in too many third downs, predictable situations, but Levis just kept making plays.
Yeah. Yeah.
On third down. Now we'll see this week. Like Tennessee sells out they're all in on stopping the run. Those linebackers are coming downhill. They're coming on run blitzes. They'll play 300 pounders at one time on the line of scrimmage. They want to stop the run. And that's what Kentucky wants to do, and you got to think this game plan is going to be a lot of 24, running the ball with efficiency, moving the chains, yada, yada, yada. But the real weakness is this Tennessee secondary, so you're going to have to throw the ball. To me, what does that look like? Like, how do they take advantage of that aggressiveness? How do they kind of scheme this up? Because there's no getting around, like, Levis has to have a really good game.
Yeah, yeah.
To win Saturday. And you got to lean on him to make plays and these receivers to make plays because they're going to get man coverage, going to get one-on-one. And you go back to 2020, the reason Mark Stoops changed his offense was because Kentucky could not beat press man coverage. The thing with this offense is it should make it pretty – they should have to find ways to beat this pretty easy and to get chunk yardage if teams want to play you like that. So that's – let's see that kind of play out.
And here's the thing, too. I'm excited and also worried about our guy Berrion Brown because he is. How do I put this? He strikes me as the type of guy who really wants to stick it to Tennessee because they desperately want him, but it was almost like they didn't really recruit him at the time. Like it was a very odd relationship between the two, and now you know they would love. They're going to be talking on Saturday how he needs to come there out of the portal. But the thing I worry about though, it's kind of like the South Carolina game where he was almost trying to do too. I just don't want him to do too much because I think he can be as awesome as he was in that Ole Miss game and earlier on in the season. It's just I just don't want him to try to do much. Let the game come to you, Berrion, and you're going to make your plays. You're going to run by some dudes. Just make the routine. Dane, I'm something about him makes me lead me to believe he's a gamer. Do we have a good sense on if Tavion Robinson will be available or not?
Yeah, they've pretty much said Will Levis wouldn't say it yesterday. It was kind of like coach speak. Like it's good to have him back out there. We'll see, but you know it's kind of trending in the right direction. Mark Stoops wouldn't say it specifically, but he kind of alluded to it, and then Berrion kind of went on. Yeah, it was good to have him back out there. So yeah, I think he's playing, good. And then they think Flax. It sounded like Flax maybe isn't practicing. This is just me kind of reading in between the lines, but it sounded like he's trending towards playing. Maybe he's limited in practice, but I think he's gonna play. But Tavion, it sounds like for sure is gonna be out there on Saturday.
Great to hear. And I believe this is going to be the return of Cedric Tillman as well for Tennessee.
we'll see. They've been very weird about that. About that kind of like Heupel. You all think Stoops is bad. Heupel, like, it's very, very vague about injury news. And we'll see. Like, he had a high ankle sprain, Nick, and you know how those are. Mm-hmm. He went and had the Tua surgery, and it's just he hasn't been able to practice. It's kind of what I've seems like I've discovered until he practices. Tennessee's not going to let him play until he practices. So that's what it kind of smells like. So if we don't know, like, mm-hmm. if we don't hear anything of it, like him practicing this week, to me, he's probably out. He's probably going to be out another game. But if he does play, I'm interested to see how that kind of maybe
balances the scales.
Well, yeah. Junk, if it could junk up their operation at all, because they've got such a good rapport going with Hooker and Hyatt. And Tillman was such kind of like their target monster before. Like, you turn on the Pitt game, I think Tillman had like 15 targets. They were looking to him a lot. Right. And he was one-on-one with MJ Devonshire a ton in that game. Devonshire won some, and he also lost some. Like, does that mess up their rhythm at all? That would be something I would be – I'll be watching if he's playing, but it seems like it's very much 50-50 for him at the moment.
Interesting. That's been a Pete Thamel Saturday morning.
Saturday scoop, yep. Well,
every game day morning, there's he has a bunch of tweets ready to roll out during college game day, and they've been targeting that Kentucky game for a while. It's gonna be odd because
Herbstreit is on the call for this game.
This is the first time he's ever called a Kentucky game, right?
Yeah, in my lifetime for sure.
Yeah, like he wasn't always calling games either. Too that was a
mm-hmm. like well that. they used to do the Thursday night game. The game day crew. Like, it used to be him and Lee Corso. Like, when we were in high school, it was him, Lee right. Corso, and Fowler, I think, would call the Thursday night games.
Yeah.
They called a bunch of Louisville games. Like, I think they were on the call for Louisville, Florida State, like the rain game.
The Louisville, Devin Hester, Miami game, I think.
Yes. Yeah. So they did Thursday night games for a long time. And then, like, it's new, like, 10 years or so. I mean, he's been doing this a while, but he's been doing these primetime games.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, it's this is the third week Kentucky's on, like, if they're not the number one game, they're the number two game of the weekend. And in each Kentucky-Florida, Kentucky-Ole Miss, now Kentucky-Tennessee, it's the game in that window. Like, yeah. It was the noon window
mm-hmm.
the first week, and it was a 7 o'clock ESPN window against Florida, and now against Tennessee. It's the game that people mm-hmm. are watching.
Yeah, the like, prime it's a
potential program elevating kind of moment if you can go down there and get a win against the number three team with everybody watching. You got an NFL quarterback people know about.
Yep. Man, it's exciting. And so let's what does that look like, Luckett? Like, I would give Kentucky, if you look at a lot of the power rating graphic stuff, like, it's usually somewhere between a 20 to 30% chance of victory for Kentucky. I'd put it a little bit higher, just because I feel like the ceiling is higher with Chris Rodriguez and Will Levis both back and healthy, and we haven't seen it a lot, so those numbers aren't necessarily baked in. So I think it's somewhere between a 30 and 40% chance for a Kentucky win, but if you were to lay out here's the plan, here's the best way here's the recipe for a Kentucky upset. What is it, Adam Luckett?
Yeah, do not get in a situation like last year where they've scored 21 points in 10 plays. Like, survive the early wave, settle in. Then it's like you have to find a way. If you're not – you don't necessarily have to be – win the turnover margin, but you have to be like, you have to, your turnovers have to be like
arm punts.
Instant flip. Well, I'm talking about your takeaways. The teams were split last year, but Tennessee got the pick six, right? So it was totally different than Kentucky's mm-hmm. turnover. Or if you get a key, I would throw like key situational turnover downs in this. You have to get like some big plays, whether it's a red zone turnover on downs for Tennessee, or you get them like a fumble when they're backed up, give your offense a short field. You have to find ways in the turnover to kind of tilt this game your way. And then offensively, it's going to all be about finishing drives this week, Nick. They're going to move the ball on this Tennessee defense. They're going to have success. But what Tennessee's been, they've been really good at two things, stopping the run and getting stops backed up. On their side, on the wrong side of the 50 for them. So for Kentucky, it's all going to be about finishing drives and being smart about how they go about it, because Tennessee's gotten a lot of people in trouble because teams roll the dice and get out of character on fourth down with some of their situations because they catch themselves trying to play out of character against an offense they're scared of. So Kentucky, you just got like early, like the best thing Saban did, I thought early in that game was just like kick that field goal, you know, and that's what Billy Napier didn't do that. And that kind of cost Florida later in the game. Like you cannot, especially early in this game, just get points, just settle in, play football, let the chips fall where they may, and then figure it out. And we heard Stoops this week kind of talk about it. It seems like he really regrets how he handled the end of that first half last year.
Yeah.
And I thought he did the right thing. Like, they went to their best player twice on third and fourth down, both manageable situations. And the first one was behind him, could have been caught, should have been caught. The second one was a drop, and he slipped. Like, those are two plays Wandale Robinson made all year last year, and he just didn't make them in that critical spot. And then it gives Tennessee – I mean, it's a six-point flip right there. And it's potentially, you know, Kentucky could have kicked the field goal, went up three, scored a touchdown on a half, they're up 10. And then Tennessee's chasing two possessions the rest of the half. And they had really no success stopping Kentucky all game. And so that, you know, I think he kind of – so how does he kind of handle just the game management aspect of this? But and we heard Rich Gangarillo talk about it. It's all about – it's about points per possession this week. It's about finishing drives. Can they finish?
See, and that's where
– that's the question. Yeah, that's a huge question. Can they do it?
What –
but they did it last – like, the thing is, I guess if you got them in the room, they would be like, well, we've been able to finish drives since we've gotten 24 back here with Will. We just haven't seen it a lot.
But weren't there, four first-half possessions against Mississippi State that got inside their own territory, right? Like, and they just only got 3 points out of it?
Yeah, penalties. I mean, yeah, penalties kill them.
Yeah, just don't be dumbasses. Finish drives. Like, that is the entire – the biggest difference between Liam Cohen – and Rich Scangarello's offense is year one to year two. Obviously, you've got cash cows. You're spreading the ball around a lot better. You had Chris Rodriguez all last year. But personnel aside, where the production comes down to, it's all that red zone efficiency. Kentucky's still pretty darn good at converting third downs.
Yeah.
But they were outstanding at finishing drives last year, and it's been horrible this year. It's just been downright pathetic. And it doesn't look as bad as it could be. Because it's not always the drives are stalling out in the red zone, right? It's like around the 35 or 40 yard line, but you're still in scoring territory.
Mm-hmm.
They have got to turn those into touchdown scoring drives. Like that is what this whole thing is about. Because I do have enough faith in this defense to stymie Tennessee quite a bit. You know, I don't think things are going to come as easily as they have before. I think Kentucky can successfully make this a limited possession game. But they got to make the most out of those possessions. They cannot leave points off the scoreboard.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. CFB Graphs has kind of got a metric for that. They're 45th nationally in like creating either scoring opportunity or scoring on an explosive play. But they're 87th in points per scoring opportunity, Nick.
Yeah, so bad. Like
what you're saying is right now, and more Tennessee's defense is what I'm talking about. They're 113th in giving up scoring opportunities. But their defense is 13th in points per scoring opportunity. So they're just getting all – like they're waiting until they get backed up to get their stops. So they're giving you room to operate. But another key to this game to me, Nick, is like field position. Against LSU and Tennessee, field position was such an advantage for Tennessee early in this game to build an early lead. They got to play with short fields. And they got to get up, and they got to set the tone of the game and the tempo of the game. Kentucky cannot. We've seen it be kind of an issue with the kicking game and whatnot. They cannot let them flip the field. Like, if Kentucky gets backed up, they got to get first downs, get out of there, and get a good punt off at least. And you've got to your offense can't put your defense in bad situations. We've talked about it a lot. They've done it consistently. Mm-hmm. And how about this? Do not give up points in an SEC game that aren't directly tied to your defense.
Yeah.
Florida, you know, you give them a red zone possession and you give them 2 points off of snap. Okay. You go to Ole Miss, a safety.
Miss PATs,
miss field goals. Miss field goals are going to happen, but yeah, all right, the PATs and all that. You go to South Carolina, you're on the reverse. You give, you know, really, you almost gave South Carolina 14 points off the bat. You had the fumble reverse, and you had the block punt. And you only gave up 7, so you could have been worse there. And then you go to Mississippi State, pick 6. Like, it's special teams and it's offense. They cannot give up cheap points to Tennessee. Last year, that's what cost them the game. You could say the biggest impact of the game was that pick 6. And you cannot, that cannot happen in this game. Nope. You cannot give away points. You need to be the team that, if any team steals points, it needs to be you in this matchup to have a legit chance to go win this game.
Yeah, and going back to your question to Stoops a few weeks ago about special teams, like, need to have a good special teams game, even if it's just not a disastrous one, right? Like, not none of those, like Max Duffy at Georgia shank putt. Like, just, hey, just play sound. Like, yeah, you don't need to be miracle workers. Now, it would be awesome if you could get a Barry on Brown miracle worker, right? Yeah. Like, that's the kind of play that flips the momentum for an underdog and gets the stadium a little bit nervous. Yeah. You can make a difference in special teams.
Well, this guy, Paxton Brooks, Nick, their punter, has punted 14 times this year. You know, he hasn't been able – he 9 were in the first 3 weeks. So since middle of September, he's punted 5 times, once against Alabama.
Sheesh.
He hasn't got a lot of work. Like, if you had a punt block in this week – maybe time to unleash it, because, you know, they just haven't seen, you know, that group hadn't seen a lot of action.
It's like so Max Duffy at Cardinal Stadium, right? And he's just not doing a whole lot.
So that would be the time for it. So I wouldn't be surprised if Kentucky, everybody's focused on the return, right, with Barry and Brown,
mm-hmm,
even Robinson. Maybe they try to steal one with a pump block this week.
I'd love to see it. It would just bring so much joy to my heart if Kentucky was able to steal one from Tennessee, because it really would wreck their dreams, and it would also make this game a rivalry. You know, like, even though Kentucky's been able to rattle off a couple wins under Stoops, that game in 2018 was devastating. You know, like, you had everything going for you. That was their worst team in forever, and you still let them beat you. Like, this is a game. 2019, the Lynn Bowden, like, 4th-and-1, and he just gets tackled right there by that. And I can't remember that linebacker's name now. That was
Daniel Batuli.
Yeah. You just ate tackles for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Like, you've been so close over the last decade and you've had a better record than them, but they keep beating you. Like, it, making this a rivalry, I think, is very important. And this gives you a lot of rivalry capital, right? Like, this would go a long way in, oh, so you got rid of that Alabama curse. Well, now you got a Kentucky one on you.
Yeah, it's just college football is great for these moments, because the best thing college football has, in my opinion, is the rivalries.
Mm-hmm.
And a good thing about rivalries is, like, when your opponent has a dream season, you could be the one that can end it, right?
Pitt 17-6 against West Virginia.
Right. Yeah, so, like, you know, they have it, or not even just end it, but, like, say a team has a really good season going and it just takes some shine off of it because you lost to school down the road or whatever. Kentucky's got a great chance here to really kind of, Tennessee's on the up and up, and just kind of stick it to them. And it would, in their house, in a big window, it could be a program elevating type of win for Kentucky.
It'd be the biggest story in college football this weekend,
mm-hmm,
without a doubt.
And so if they can do that, like, they just, it would be so good on so many fronts. It would create so much buzz and juice, I think, for the program. We talk about, like, you need that signing day is, like, coming fast.
Less than 2 months.
Get a quick bump before that, you know, that arrives, and you can potentially close strong. Like, it could just have a lot of good vibes, and then it's really setting you up where you could host Georgia for game day, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're probably going to be 8-2. It might not be for the East, but they could be undefeated. You could be in the top 10, and then you could play spoiler again.
Yeah,
a couple weeks, and so that's on the table.
Go spend New Year's in the Big Easy. So
that's all. It's on the table.
Yeah, yeah. Just go down there, shock the world at Tennessee. We will be happily dancing on their graves in their stupid black uniforms, if that is the case. But there's also, we got to bring up something that's could be kind of morbid, but it feels like there's the Mark Stoops name in the coaching carousel is going to start churning up once again. And I know for the longest time we felt that last year was probably the biggest threat to him leaving. But his name is firmly in the mix at Nebraska once again. Now, granted, this is the part of the, Nebraska, you fire your coach, you have your initial reaction, but it's a long time before they're hiring a guy. So then you get the second round of names, and that's where Stoops has been generated. His name has come up.
Yeah, I think obviously the Big Ten West type of fit with Nebraska could make sense. Our Nebraska on 3 site is reporting that he's kind of a legit candidate here. And you're going to hear all the kind of Nick cookie cutter reasons.
Yeah.
Football school versus basketball school.
Yep. Nil money.
He's still not making $8 million. Recruiting reasons, yeah. NIL, all of that. So I think people need to be ready for that. I don't think he's going to Nebraska. Iowa's a different story. I think you would have to watch out for.
I think the Pelini, the relationship he has with him, I think that kind of disqualifies Nebraska. But, man, after Iowa took a licking at Ohio State, I gave you all the unders in my pick 3 pick. I ended up just taking Ohio State in the points and never had a doubt that they were going to cover
it. In true Roush fashion.
Yeah, yeah. I flip-flopped at the last minute. Big surprise. But after the game, they had that quote that's kind of going around about how classy he was. And Kirk Ferentz he sounded really defeated. He's like, well, it could be worse. I could be you guys. He's going to be forced to fire his son. And he might just retire.
Or retire, yeah.
Yeah, he might just retire instead. And that job, it doesn't feel like it's as far off. I mean, they were second-ranked in the country for a long time last year, right? They already have a lot of good pieces. You can just go get some offensive ones in the transfer portal.
Yeah.
It's home. And it's still the Big Ten West where there's a scenario for a 7-way tie to finish the season.
It's also home to Brett Bielema, too.
Yeah.
And he's in that division. He might be about to win it at Illinois.
By the way, there was some bold projections of Brett Bielema versus Mark Stoops in Tampa. And I wanted to just get in a room with those two.
Yeah, can we lock that in right now?
Yeah. Let's go to Ybor City, right?
Yeah. you might see the coaching staffs might cross paths there in Ybor City if that were to happen. Here's the thing with this, I think you very much see this play out as leverage. Negotiation leverage. With Iowa, it's just one to watch. He's been at Kentucky 10 years. Does he just want to change,
Right.
It's Iowa. Special to him, all that. Nebraska, it's just,
That's a rebuild.
Nebraska's got a lot going for it. It's in the right division in the Big Ten. It's in a big, a bit being in the Big Ten SEC matters, I think, moving forward. But it's just a lot of stuff there you got to get through and siphon through. Where more, Iowa's more turnkey to me. Next coach can go in there and they have it kind of set what it is and how they operate. Where Nebraska, it's a lot of moving parts.
See, in Nebraska feels more you've already done that at Kentucky. You know how hard it is. Do you really want to go through that again?
Do you want to leave, essentially he's got to ask himself, does he want to leave where he's got the same, literally the same possibility as of right now to win a division title and potentially get in the playoff. Now, I think that calculus changes when divisions are scrapped in the SEC.
Right.
And 9-game schedules are here. It gets a lot, to me, it just gets a lot harder here at Kentucky when that happens. But as is right now, it sounds like Texas and Oklahoma aren't coming for a while. If they're not coming for a while, that means I think divisions are going to stay for a couple years.
You got a really good recruiting class. You might want to see that through.
You know, and you've kind of got things cooking here. It sounds, you know, doing a little digging, they feel like, and Rich talked about this last week, they feel confident that they're going to get a good quarterback. And so, and they've got, like, you look at their roster, Nick, next year and the next 2 years, they're in shape to be really good.
Yeah, yeah. And as bad as that offensive line was early, like, I think they're all going to be back. I mean, they can all be back. Bring them all back.
Everybody but Tayshaun. Tayshaun's
He's the only one that can't come back. Yeah.
Yeah. So. But you get Horsey back, and then, like, there's a blueprint where you could get that offensive line where it's not going to be one of the better units in the SEC, but it could be middle of the pack next year pretty easily, I think. If you find – if Flax develops just a little bit more and you can find a quality tackle, there's a path there to competent play. And then you can, you know, like, you're going to have depth, I think.
Yeah.
With DeAndre Buford playing some, Keontae Goodwin should be ready to contribute at some level next year. And so there's some options there. It's, and then on defensive side, like, Nick, they can return. You know, they're going to lose Square, and that's going to be a huge loss. They're going to lose Wright, and that's going to be a huge loss. But they could get J.J. Weaver back, you know, year three for Trevin Wallace, potentially. You know, that whole second, you know, Kedron Smith, they're going to have to find another corner, but you can really talk yourself in that secondary, like Carrington Valentine, Jordan Lovett, Alex Safari.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pieces there. And so, you know, if you can keep, you know, keep, you need to keep Brad White around for another year, because Saturday quietly could be like the Brad White moment. Like, that could be the moment where people win or lose, I think. If they go out and play well against that Tennessee offense, everybody's going to be like, who is that guy?
Yeah.
That's the guy Brian Kelly wanted hired at LSU last year. Is that right? Like, what is his – what do we need to know about him? Know more about him. And so that's going to be a key too. So, yeah, I mean, that's – he's just got a lot going for him. It's going to take something special to leave. Like, to me, I don't see him – you would think, at least, that he would want to leave for a place you can go in. Like a Brian Kelly situation at LSU. Go in. Yeah. You there's a blueprint to win a national championship there, and – in a 4 or 5 year period, you could get there. And more, it's easier to get talent and all of that. And so, that's what I see. But I do think they probably want some more financial backing. The NIL stuff. We know Kentucky's kind of drug their feet on that, but they're also dealing with those whatever. Like, I don't think much is going to come of these Chris Rodriguez violations.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you saw this. Cleavon Thomas is at Montana State. Started every game, and now he's suspended by Montana State indefinitely for the they're calling it a compliance issue at his previous school. So he was also involved. So I don't know if what's going on there. So there's there's been a lot of change here at Kentucky in the last year or so for Stoops.
Yeah. So prepare yourselves for the coaching.
Yeah. Just get ready for a while, probably 2 weeks after the Kentucky Louisville game. Just with signing day and all of that, it's just going to – football season will be dying at that point.
If I'm pushing my chips to Brad White if that does happen.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I'm already on that train. I think it's a pretty easy decision, personally.
Yeah. And even without the head coaching experience, I know folks are scarred by the Joker Phillips stuff, but – Brad White is
different.
This is so much different.
Just trust me.
Yeah, and I know that sounds bad, but like, I mean, Joker's a career position coach for a reason. You know, like, I think part of they just wanted to keep him from going to Oklahoma, so they gave him the coach in waiting thing. That was just
in hindsight.
It's just a bad decision on Mitch Barnhart's. And that's the thing, too. Coaching waitings don't happen anymore. Like, they just don't.
And we just didn't know. Like, at that time, they were the only ones, but people just didn't realize those were that was a terrible idea, the head coaching waiting. None of those worked out.
No.
It was just a bad idea at that back then. But that's just, you know, you live and learn type thing with that.
But I would feel confident in Brad White making that jump right away. I would. And it would keep a lot of the momentum kind of going in the right direction as well. You could still keep Rich around. You know, like a lot of the – yeah, it could be a period of instability, and I think it would keep the ship kind of moving in the right direction if that does get to fruition. But you know what? We don't got to worry about that for now. Just got to worry about kicking Tennessee's ass on Saturday. Look, it, I can't – I probably won't sleep at all Saturday night if they do win. It's just going to be – you know, all nighter with Frank. He can hang out with me. We can have some bottles together.
It's a night like it's what Twitter is made for.
Oh, just scrolling through meltdowns. Oh, and yes. Going through the Tennessee matches, because like they really are. They act like it's still 2006 online, and you can just be as hateful as you want and say. I mean, they do not have any sense or whatever on their trash talk. They're just nasty, and so to just. Piss on their graves would be – it would give me so much joy.
Yeah, and just the Vols are back memes that Kentucky fans could throw out would just be incredible.
Oh, man. Well, it's felt good to get back. I appreciate all the kind words from all of our listeners out there who congratulated me on the new baby boy. So we're excited here at the Roush House. We're figuring things out little by little, but excited for Saturday night. Should be a good one. Excited to throw some more Port Royal plants on my back, carrying this kid around all the time. Really need it. So check them out, portroyalplants.com. And as always, subscribe to our YouTube if you have not yet. Subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And let's go get this W. All right, go Cats, beat Tennessee, and go Kroger.